Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom quality, made in Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's GHIRELLI.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Wait a minute! 60 Seconds of Reflection with Martha Fernandez Sardina.
He is risen! The Lord is risen from the dead. That is the song of Christians. The Lord is risen, alleluia. He is truly risen, as he said, alleluia, alleluia. For centuries, Christians the world over have been celebrating the fact that Christ defeated death. He killed death. Death is dead. Life is alive. And Jesus is alive and well, and he is inviting each one of us, knocking at the door of our hearts, to enter in, to sup with us, to dine with us, to give us his very body and blood, soul and divinity, as our food. Will you welcome him? Will you season it up? Will you enjoy this Easter Sunday, Easter octave, and Easter season, 50 days of glorious celebration, and come closer to Jesus to receive the new life that he has won for you? You were one by one who is God Almighty. Enjoy Easter, enjoy the resurrection, enjoy Jesus.
For more information about Martha, visit MarthaFernandezSardina.com.
By definition, a storyteller conveys events in words, images, and sounds, often by improvisation or embellishment. The Living Bread Radio Network presents The Storytellers with Tony Agnese. Today, you'll hear a faith-based, inspirational story that's both heartfelt and heartwarming. And now, let's meet today's storyteller with Tony Agnese.
Hi, this is Tony Agnese, and welcome to this edition of The Storytellers. Each week here on The Storytellers, we feature a guest and discuss their personal journey of faith and the ministries they share as authors and speakers and bloggers and radio and television hosts. And today's guest, we can check off just about every one of those categories. August Turek is an award-winning author, speaker, consultant. He's a contributor to Forbes.com and the BBC. He is the founder of the spiritual and educational nonprofit Self-Knowledge Symposium Foundation, and he is a very successful author as well. His book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, was published in 2013, and he's got a brand new book called Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life. August, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you as well. So you broadcast into Cleveland, right?
We sure do. Absolutely.
I used to live in Cleveland back in the old days.
Wow, that's terrific. Back before the MTV days?
Yes, well before in the early 70s, I lived in Little Italy. Case Western Reserve University there. Yeah.
Great school. August, let's talk a little bit about your story, because I know you really have had an interesting career life, and then you've had a dark night as well. Tell us a little bit about your growing up and your faith journey as a Catholic.
Well, I'm from a large Catholic family from right outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm the oldest of 8 children. There's 7 boys and then a girl. I went to St. Simon and Jude School And then what happened that kind of changed my life was I won a scholarship to go to a New England boarding school when I was a freshman in high school. So I left the Catholic Canavan High School and went up to the Hotchkiss School up in Lakeville, Connecticut, which is a very, which was my first, I would say, mind-blowing experience, since I came in contact with so many different kinds of people with so many different kinds of backgrounds and religious experience. By the time I came back to school at the University of Pittsburgh, I became profoundly interested in religion, spirituality. I was always an altar boy and choir boy and all that stuff. But when I hit college, I got, you know, I went through kind of a crisis of faith, and I decided to go all the way back to zero and start a spiritual search. And so I pretty much have been on that my entire life. That's been my number one priority. It took me in all kinds of different directions. You know, I studied Zen Buddhism under a teacher for 5 years in the early 70s. Then I used to travel around as a carpet installer. That's what I was doing in Cleveland. And I used to ask bookstore owners who was the smartest people in town, the wisest people I could learn from. And a bookstore owner in Washington, D.C. gave me the name of a man named Lewis R. Mobley. And I called him up, and he invited me out to his house, and it turned out he had lived on his big estate outside of Washington, D.C., and he had founded the IBM Executive School. And I eventually called him up, and I said, Lou, I'll make you an offer. And he said, what's that? I said, I know you've retired, and you've got a little consulting business. I said, I will hustle you up clients for your consulting business for free. I said, all I want from you is teach me everything you know. And he invited me to live in his house with him and live with his family, and he tutored me. And one of the things, of course, the thing that drew me to him was not the business background, but the fact that he was a profoundly spiritual guy, and he had infused the IBM Executive School with one of his spiritual and religious ideas, which was what I was really interested in. From there, I ended up in New York and ended up being one of the founders of MTV when it started in 81, and then I was one of the founders of what's called the A&E Network. And I eventually ended up down here in North Carolina working for a software company. And then I started my own in 1993. Me and a couple of my spiritual buddies, we decided to start I chronicle this whole episode in my Business Secrets of the Trappist Monk book, because we just decided we wanted to see if we could build a company based on the kind of spiritual principles that the Trappist practiced. And we started with $2,500 just to make it interesting. We decided never to put any more money into the business than that. We never borrowed any money. We never put any more of our own money in. We never took on any investors. And we bootstrapped from zero to 7 years later, we had two software companies. And we sold them to an Israeli company for cash and stock. And then the Israeli company was sold to BMC Software for $150 million in cash. So that $2,500 investment and our Trappist principles paid us off. Pretty good, very, very well.
Pretty good return. Two things really popped into my mind listening to you, August. And the first was, you know, I had this crisis of faith, which a lot of us have right out of high school or right out of college. You know, we have this crisis. What was the one thing that kind of caused you to begin this quest that you've been on the rest of your life?
Well, you know, I think that the what I wanted most of all from the beginning, as far as I can remember now, because this all started when I was in college, was certainty. I wanted to be able to live my life in full knowledge that I was that everything was good, that I wasn't going to look back at 60 or 65 or 70 and say, wow, boy, did I blow it. And the thing that I began to doubt profoundly was the validity of just belief. And now I don't think faith and belief are the same thing. And so I wanted firsthand knowledge rather than secondhand kind of knowledge, and I didn't want to stake my whole life. I think the thing that shook my, caused my first, you know, kind of crisis was going to a prep school with all kinds of kids from all over the world, from all over the country, from all these different religious backgrounds, including Jewish kids and kids from the Far East who were Buddhist, et cetera. And I said, wait a second, you know, every single person thinks they're right. How can they can't all be right. So how do I know I'm right? And so once you started down that road of asking those kinds of questions, it led me into philosophy and theology and just a real a hunger. But I think my hunger was to know, you know, my title of my new book, Brother John, is A Monk, a Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life, was to know what my purpose was. What is the purpose of life? Does life have meaning? You know, frankly, is there a God? And what is my relationship with that God? And how do I know I'm in right relationship with him? All those kinds of questions became something that it was just not things that just passed through me. It became absolutely white-hot important to me. I had to get to the bottom of things. You know, I ran into a young monk a few years ago at the monastery, Methkin Abbey, which is the monastery that I write about, Trappist Monastery outside of South Carolina. There was a young guy there, and he was a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed kind of guy. And so I asked him, I said, what made you decide to become a monk? And he looked at me, and he said, I got to know. I got said no. And ever since then, you know, he's no longer a monk, but we're still good friends. And every time I talk to him, I say, you know, how did you know to give me that answer, you know? How did you know I would understand it? He said, I don't know how I knew, but I just knew that you would know. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly the way I was when I was a baby. I had to know. I have to know.
Would you agree that everybody's kind of looking for the purpose of their lives, but most of us don't look very hard? You really looked hard for that purpose.
I dedicated my whole life to that, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I've often wondered how, you know, why, you know, the pick apart, I'm a pretty versatile guy who's used to answering questions and thinking on my feet. But the one question that that people often ask me that I don't really have a good answer for, except vocation, except God called me, is why did I, I had an editor for one of my books tell me one time, said, I don't understand. He said, we all asked those questions back in college, but you did something about mm-hmm. it. Why? And I said, I don't know. I don't know why it became so incredibly important and the guiding principle of my entire life. Of course, the argument that I make in both of my books is that everybody has the exact same purpose in life. And so we don't all have different purposes, but there is only one purpose. So
you said something that kind of caught my attention. You said that there's a difference between belief and faith. Would you spend a minute on that?
Okay, let me use the example of geometry. You know, when you study geometry in high school, and I was a terrible geometry student, and I actually went through this. So my teacher tells me A squared plus B squared equals C squared, and so then he says you got to go do the proof. And I say to my teacher, why do I need to do that? I believe you. I believe you've done the proof. I believe that Pythagoras has done the proof. I believe that 100,000 million college students and high school students have done the proof. Why do I got to do it again? And he, guess what he said to me? He says, no, you've got to do the proof. It's not enough for you to take my word for it. And to me, the difference is belief would be if I just took his word for it and didn't bother to do the proof.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is what says, listen, there's enough here that justifies me going out and doing all the work I need to do in order to do the proof. Mm-hmm. I need to do the proof. Carl Rahner, the great Catholic theologian, wrote a paper called Return to Chalcedon one time. And he was talking about Chalcedon, of course, is where the Apostles' Creed was really finally solidified, the Catholic Creed. And his argument was you have to leave the creed behind, forget everything that you thought you knew, and then find your way back to the creed through your own work. In other words, do the proof, not just learn how to repeat after me. I believe in one God, Father Almighty, the Maker of everything. That's not enough.
You've got it. You've got to prove it for yourself.
That's why I call it a transformational journey. I put it on Facebook just recently. I said life's not. Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not a choice, it's a habit. And he went on to say, if you become trustworthy by doing trustworthy things, you become truthful by telling the truth. And I said, as my commentary on that, I said, we often call life a learning process. Life's not a learning process, it's a becoming process. Mm-hmm. We must become the truth. We must become our purpose.
August Turek is my guest. Listening to your story, it seems to me that God put all the right people in your path, that somehow or other, call it divine intervention or whatever, you aligned yourself with those people that moved everything forward, whether it be, staying at someone's house who you met or the guys you formed the company with and so forth. Do you think that God puts the right people in all of our paths? We're just pretty lousy at picking and choosing?
I absolutely. You know, one of the nice, I coached college students on religious and spiritual things for over 20 years at the University of North Carolina and North Carolina State and Duke. And one of my Duke students wrote me a letter shortly after he graduated. He said, I've been listening to your stories for 4 years, and I came to the conclusion that you're that all these extraordinary things happen to you. And he said, no, I've come to the conclusion that the kind of things that happen to you happen for all of us. The difference between you and me is you notice. Mm-hmm. You pay attention to it, you know? And he said, you see the extraordinary in the ordinary. And I think that's true. But I'll also say this. I said I wrote an article about Lou Mobley one time, and for Forbes magazine, my experience with him, and I called Are You Coachable? The 5 Steps to Coachability. And in it, I said, yes, I said, I've been tremendously fortunate and unbelievably grateful for the people. On the other hand, I busted my butt. I mean, I got off, yes, I didn't tell you about the 484 other bookstores I went to and got the names of idiots.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
You know, I was always, I drove 400 miles one time to meet some guy and was extremely disappointed in it. I mean, there's, I was always moving, and that's part of what I get into in Brother John, The Monk, Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life, my book, is that we have to meet God halfway. We have to put ourselves, we talk about it in business, put yourself in play. You got to put yourself in play so that grace can hit you.
Mm-hmm. My guest is August Turek. The book is Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life. We're going to zero in on that book here in the next segment. We also want to talk about August's his own dark night of the soul and how he got involved with the monks at Mepkin Abbey. And we'll do all that when we return on this edition of The Storytellers.
Support for The Storytellers is provided by CatholicBook.net, serving the Catholic community for 30 years with books, Bibles, gifts, and more. CatholicBook.net is safe, secure, and simple to use. Just a few clicks and your purchase is delivered right to your door. CatholicBook.net, for 30 years, a commitment to service.
This is Tony Agnese. Welcome back to The Storytellers. My guest is August Turek, who's an award-winning author, speaker, consultant, contributor to Forbes.com and the BBC, and he's got a brand new book that's out, and as I told him earlier, gracing my coffee table, Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life. August, let's pick up here. You had an accident that kind of sent you reeling there for a while. Tell me about that and how you were brought back to that and how the Trappist Monastery helped you.
Well, a lot of the theme of my book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks and to the extent Brother John, is what I call happy accidents. And you and I were talking in the previous segment about grace and about having to meet God halfway. But I say a lot of times that the monks don't just know how to make success happen. Their biggest secret is in how to let success happen. And so I've been really graced with so many wonderful happy accidents, but no one would have ever suspected that the happiest accident that has ever happened in my entire life was my college students at Duke talked me into going skydiving with them. And as I like to say, I was brave enough to jump out of an airplane, but not brave enough to tell them I was too darn old to be jumping out of airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
So this was back in 1996. I was I was the CEO of my company at the time, and I jumped out of the airplane and I smashed my right ankle to smithereens. I mean, really bad. I had 2 compound fractures of the tibia and the fibula that were sticking out the side of my foot. So anyway, I end up in the hospital for a week, and I suddenly start having these horrible panic attacks, and I can't figure out where they're coming from. They were severe panic attacks, and accompanied by deep, deep, deep depression and fear, terrible fear. Mm. And I'm laying there agonizing over this. Suddenly it popped into my head. I was facing my mortality for the first time. And yes, the doctor was telling me I was going to go home in a week or so here. But what's going to happen in a few years when he walks in and says, there's nothing more we can do for you, Mr. Turek? Then what am I going to do? And when I realized that what was going on, the panic attacks got even worse. And so then in my desperation, I decided, that I could fall back on my religious stuff that I've been doing for the last 25 years,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I reached back for my faith, it was not there.
When this happened, then, how does the monastery play into that?
Well, what happened was I get out of the hospital. The panic goes away. I'm deeply depressed. I'm going into what I later called my 2-year dark night of the soul. Several months later, I get a telephone call from one of my college students. He tells me that he's spending the entire summer at a Trappist monastery in South Carolina called Mepkin Abbey as a monastic guest, which meant he gets up at 3 in the morning with them, goes to work with them, goes to pray with them eight times a day. They go to church eight times a day. They live the rule of St. Benedict. And I just blurted out, I got to come. And he said, when? And I said, now. And then I realized it was Wednesday, and I was at work. I said, this weekend. And he said, let me ask Brother John. And that was the first time I ever heard Brother John's name. And he must have had some pull. Well, he did have. I later found out they loved him. His name was Josh, and the monks loved him. And so, because there's usually a big, long waiting list to get there, but Brother John eased me in that very weekend. I was blown away. I came back the next weekend. I was impressed the next weekend. So finally what I did was I sent a letter in and applied to become a monastic guest myself. And I was accepted for a four-week thing over Christmas of 1996. Now, as a monastic guest, you wear a habit. Not exactly a habit. It's a big surplice that comes down below your waist and has a hood on it. And you live behind the monastic monastic wall with the monks in their rooms, and you do everything that they do. And you're a part-time monk, again, getting up at 3 in the morning. So I went down there. But again, the important thing to remember is I didn't go down there as a idle, not an idle, but as a curious retreatant or somebody just looking for, I was desperate at that time of my life, and I was looking for some way out of my dilemma.
And Brother John, this is the first time you met him, and what was it about him that you found attractive in the sense that he was going to be able to help you work through things?
Well, the thing that happened was, and I met Brother John on that very first weekend. So by the time I got down there over Christmas, I knew him relatively well. Plus, I would see him every morning because he gave the work assignments out. And then what happened was on Christmas Eve of 1996, Christmas Eve at the monastery is the same as any other day at the monastery. You get up at 3 in the morning. You go to church eight times a day. You work in the monastic farms. The only difference is that at 8 o'clock at night, when you usually would go to bed, so you can get up at 3 in the morning again, you stay up because we have Mass. Mass happens at 8:30, and that Mass goes till 10 or 10:15. And after Mass, Christmas Mass, or Christmas Eve Mass, then there is a little party. Now, these are Trappist monks. They are the ones that before Vatican II didn't even speak. So they're really ascetic. So they don't, even now, they don't talk very much, and they certainly don't have a lot of parties. So you have this one party that you go to on Christmas Eve, and yeah, you get some cookies and just some cakes and some apple cider and some, say Merry Christmas. And suddenly I'm just absolutely dead on my feet. It's 11:30 at night, and I'm tired, and I've been up since 3 in the morning. And so I decide I got to get back to my room. And as I head to the door, I realize it's pouring down rain and 38 degrees outside, and I don't have an umbrella. So I'm kicking myself, thinking I'm going to be soaking wet and for morning services and all this. And I open the door, and the light pours out, and there's a dim figure standing out there. I squint, and I see there's a man standing under an umbrella. I squint again, and I see it's Brother John. I said, Brother John, what are you doing? He said, I'm here to walk those who forgot their umbrellas back to their rooms. So the next thing I know, I'm under an umbrella walking beside Brother John in 38-degree weathers, and I'm just absolutely gobsmacked. Here's a man who's been in the monastery 40 years. He works harder than anybody. He's the foreman. He gets up at 2:30 in the morning to make coffee for everybody. He gets one lousy party a year, and he'd rather stand outside in 38-degree weather in case some bozo like me forgot his umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And the peace and love and joy that this man had that made it effortless for him to do this. This wasn't a duty. This wasn't a penance. This was what he really wanted to do. Where does this come from? And why am I not like this? Why are the rest of us not like this? How can I become like this? That all became the genesis then, a seed of the, or what we might call the Zen koan that I worked on over the next 2 years going through this dark night.
It's amazing story. You wrote about Brother John. You hadn't done a lot of writing for publication before, and it won a major prize.
Well, that's another one of those happy accidents, I said at the end of Brother of Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, I said, I'm a good planner, because in business, if I set the dominoes up, I was very good at making sure they all went down in the right order the way I planned it. But I never had a plan for my life. I said, what I now realize in retrospect, they say the problem with life is must be lived forward but only understood backwards. And now when I look backwards, I see there was always a plan for my life. It just wasn't, it was so big I didn't see it. Because it wasn't my plan, obviously. It was God's plan. But what happened was one of my college students in 2004, these Duke students again started egging me to enter this essay contest. So I looked it up online. It was the Templeton Foundation was offering a Templeton Prize for 3,500 words or less, what is the purpose of life? And it was open to previously published material, professional writers, and worst of all, from my perspective, it's been going on for about a year and a half, and I had a week to 10 days till the due date. I'd never written anything before, but I decided to take a crack at it. I wasn't getting anywhere. And then another one of my students, I was complaining to him, and he said, why don't you just write that story about Brother John you're always telling us about? And so, boom, I sat down. I said, that's it, you know. So I took about 2 days writing it, 2 days polishing it. I got it out the door, just the deadline. I forgot about it. 6 months later, they called me up. I won the $100,000 grand prize.
Wow.
Brother John, my essay had gone up against 10,000 other essays from 47 different countries and every state in the union, and it won.
Amazing, amazing.
That radically changed my life.
And I know you
set me off on a whole different career.
It really started you on in a totally different direction. And tell our listeners what you did with the $100,000.
Well, I donated the $100,000 to this nonprofit corporation that you mentioned. It's called Self Knowledge. Well, I gave some money to the monastery. I thought they deserved some, but I gave all of the rest of it to some other charities, but mostly to this nonprofit. And so, everything I make, all of the book sales that I get, all the consulting fees I get, I consider all this my spiritual work.
Mm-hmm.
And I live on a 75-acre farm. I did well in business. So anything that I make from anything I do with a religious orientation to it is donated to charity. And I have this nonprofit corporation, and my personal belief is, and I write a lot about this extensively, that we are going through a crisis of meaning and purpose in the world today, and that the opioid crisis, and the fact that just recently we found out that the life expectancy in America has gone down for the last 3 years in a row for the first time since they started tracking it. And why? Because of suicide and because of the opioid addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that 30% of all the kids entering Duke University are already on antidepressants and anti-anxiety pills. And everybody talks about, you know, shooting up high schools and all these other things, and they act like as if they're different problems. I see them all as a symptomatic of the same problem, that people don't have higher meaning and higher purpose in their lives. They don't have God in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole mission is to help people find that meaning, higher meaning and higher purpose in their life. And I deal with that individually with the Brother John book. We're talking about how Brother John taught me individually what the purpose of life is. And then in my book, Business Secrets, I'm talking about how can businesses or organizations, our communities, have a higher purpose and a higher mission.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we offer that to other people? I was up at Catholic University just last week talking to a bunch of graduate students at the Bush School of Business, and I said, listen, what is the job of leadership? I said, the job of leadership is to provide meaning and purpose to an organization. You know, leadership starts by leading ourselves. So what is your higher meaning? What is your higher purpose in your life? And we are really dealing in our country with a crisis of leadership. We don't have the leadership that we need to help people find the meaning, and they're turning to drugs and suicide and everything else out of despair.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous. So that's what I do with my money. I donate it to my nonprofit corporation. I do want to mention real quickly, by the way, that my Brother John book is a illustrated book. What happened was that over the years, I would get letters from people telling me about how Brother they had stumbled on my essay someplace. It was reprinted in the Best of Christian, the Best of Catholic writing, so they'd stumble on it and tell me that it helped them get through a death of a child or it helped them get through a terrible divorce. And then a year ago in August, some guy, a bank executive, showed up at my house just to thank me for writing Brother John. It turned out that his wife had walked out on him, and he had been badly in love with her, and his life hit the spiral, and he got suicidal, and he stumbled on Brother John, the essay. It helped him, and so they sent him to the monastery. He spent 2 months with the monks. The monks turned his life around, and so he came all the way to my house, which was a six-hour drive one way, just to thank me.
Amazing.
And I said to him, I said, I feel tremendously gratified, but I also feel guilty because I have a candle that's under a bushel basket. So I racked my brains and said, how can I turn a 3,500-word essay into a book? It's not long enough for a typical book. But then I thought, how about if it was an illustrated book? And
mm-hmm.
The Lord sent me Glenn Harrington, a good Irish Catholic boy, who to this day I've never met, who turned out to be a multiple award-winning artist.
And the pictures, the paintings are gorgeous through the book. They're just Amazing.
And he said, I'll paint you 22 original oil paintings of Nepkin Abbey and the monk. So we combined, so the book is a combination of a $100,000 award-winning essay with 22 original oil paintings from a multiple award-winning artist. And it turned out spectacularly. I mean, just people just love it.
August, I wish we had more time, but we're out of time for the program. This has been a fascinating half hour, and my thanks to you for being on. The book is entitled Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life, and his first book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, also excellent. August Turk, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.
This is Tony Agnese. We'll see you next time on The Storytellers.
Hope you've enjoyed today's edition of The Storytellers with Tony Agnese, a production of the Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio. To learn more about today's storyteller, go to thestorytellersradio.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast and hear all of our past shows. And join us again next week at this same time for The Storytellers with Tony Agnese.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.